Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. Today I have Whitney Webb joining me yet again for another dive into some information that you're probably not going to hear anywhere else. And more importantly, stuff that this outlet and Whitney Webb predominantly have been talking about and trying to push into the sphere for weeks, months even, and seemingly nobody else wants to talk about this information. And we're even getting the badge of censorship from YouTube for talking about the things that we should all be talking about. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence again today and the biosensors and implantables that we've been touching on for a while. We're going to get into some more information about Operation Warp Speed and touch on this topic that I think is one of the most important that seems to be, I mean, that was completely called out by Whitney Webb. And this is the idea of the Iran, you know, Iran and China and Russia in the election, and the idea of like white supremacy somehow working with the diametric opposite of what they actually are, which makes no sense at all. All of it tying in with this biosecurity state and false flags and all of this, and an interesting discussion on some developments with the ADL. But we'll get into all of that today. So thank you for being here, Whitney. As always, how are you today?
I'm doing great. My pleasure to be back on the now, you know, censored Last American Vagabond.
Yes, the new beginning, right? Because this is, I mean, I really have been seeing a lot of interesting changes from what has been happening in positive ways. And it's hard to be positive about the way this is going when just, you know, you see so much stuff removed and it's unjust and illegal even, but it's almost inspiring to a certain degree, you know, because this is showing people how important it is, you know, what we're doing, what a lot of independent media are doing. So thank you for being here. Let's get into some powerful stuff that, again, I don't think you're going to hear many other places. So you want to take the lead here, Whitney, and start us off?
Yeah, sure thing. All right. So to start, we wanted to start the day with some updates to the Orwellian panopticon driven by AI and stuff you have to put on or in your bodies that, you know, this push we've been seeing throughout the year, trying to normalize this type of stuff. So just a couple days ago in Forbes, they had a story talking about how your smartwatch, well, this is yesterday, actually, your smartwatch will soon sequence your DNA for you. They estimate in 4 to 5 years, but they say it could be sooner, right? So, you know, this whole thing about initially getting to wear the smartwatch, right? Oh, it's about fitness, you know, how they originally sell it to you. From stuff we've covered on the show in the past and articles like this, you know, it should be abundantly clear that there is a lot more planned for these smartwatches and fitness wearables than just, what's your heart rate and how well are you exercising and, you know, and things like that. You know, the plan for these is definitely something that goes a lot farther. And it talks about, brings up some topics that we've covered before, this push to revolutionize personalized medicine with medicines and particularly vaccines tailored to your specific DNA and how all of this is going to help fight cancer. Remember, that's how Google and the Pentagon's new healthcare initiative is being sold. It says cancer, but they tell you there at the end that soon they'll be making it for all diseases and also for COVID-19.
Let me show this real quick right off the bat. And you can keep your screen up, I believe. Oh, it's okay. I believe mine ends up going over when I show it, but I just talked about this in one of the recent shows, and it just seems interestingly tied in with that, this patent that is kind of converging this idea of the wearable and testing, they claim, not even like prediction, but testing of COVID-19 and whether you have it. And of course, it's a Richard Rothschild patent in regard to COVID-19. But when you really get into it, it literally talks about tracking you and the phone and the user and putting all that information into the cloud. But that's about testing and COVID-19, right? So just interesting that this is something that's happening in real time as their articles are talking about it. So please continue.
Right. Well, this is interesting too, because I think I mentioned on the show before when we were talking about the secret warp speed vaccine contracts in the Advanced Technology International group that's being used to sort of keep those warp speed contracts secret. They recently put out a solicitation for a wearable that would diagnose COVID-19. Right. And so they're a government funded think tank. So obviously they do research and development that the government wants, that the government plans to use. And so it's interesting to see that patent pop up at about the same time.
Right. And it's always important to note that these have been planned, you know, as you saw in the picture I just showed, that was something that's been going on since 2015. As always, these are things they've been trying to accomplish for a long time that COVID-19 allowed them to do. always important to think of that.
So as you can sort of see here, it talks about wearable DNA sequencing devices, just 4 to 5 years away, they say. And here it talks about, you know, now we can run the entire DNA analysis pipeline faster than ever, and how great this is for the medical sector. And here it is again, DNA tailored medication just for you. It's going to be a complete game changer in health. You're going to get medication customized to exactly how your body works, right?
You know why that's interesting? There is, Brian B. Rich from After Hours Live has been talking about this for a while, and this may be exactly why this has been seeded from a long time ago, that there's this argument that, because I think right now we should be inherently skeptical of vaccines and this kind of medicine in its entirety because of the intentions behind it, if nothing mm-hmm. else. But he mentioned this discussion that a lot of experts for a while now have been trying to make this argument that no, the best way for vaccines is to tailor it specifically to each individual. And I wonder if that is actually the case, or if that was just always the end game in what they're trying to accomplish. You know,
well, I think the reason this kind of stuff is alarming, it's actually up here in the article. This says, you know, all of this started, this DNA tailored medication, it started off with the Human Genome Project. Mm. I've had an article in the works. Hopefully I'll be collaborating with Vanessa Beely to produce it. The person who originally came up with the idea for the Human Genome Project is a German-born British geneticist named Walter Bodmer, who used to be president of the UK's Eugenic Society. And this was his idea. And he is very much tied up with the developers at Oxford University who produced the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, whose trial just killed a person, right? So, you know.
That's an important conversation when we should get into at some point in regard to that actually being a vaccine and not a saline placebo like they're trying to sell to everybody.
Right. But the point is, DNA tailored medication, if this is something that came originally from that, you know, Walter Bodmer sphere, which is quite large and doesn't involve just Oxford University in the UK, but also to a large extent involves a handful of UK universities or US universities, sorry, Johns Hopkins, Stanford, Harvard, and MIT are the US universities in this orbit. And wow, what do you know this year, those universities have been the ones promoting a lot of this very stuff, whether it's the gene editing thing or the wearables or the implantable stuff. They're all coming from these same universities, and also a lot of the smart city things like the smart sewer network and all of that stuff also coming out of MIT. It's very interesting.
Where do you see Charles Lieber playing into that? The idea, you know, this guy that was like the leading guy in the field of nanotechnology, like mimicking viruses and all that. And remember, he was the person who got arrested in the beginning for, you know, deals with China and all this from Harvard, right? How do you see that connecting? Right.
I honestly don't really know. I'd have to think on it a bit, but I suspect how a lot of this stuff is, it was an argument over money and the commercialization. We've seen a lot of these, like, you know, quote unquote, bad actor type individual, whether it's an individual or a corporation, you know, sort of going into predatory feeding frenzy mode over all the, you know, relief funds or research funds that COVID-19 has sort of let loose in these different areas. So, you know, we've seen different pharmaceutical companies, for example, fighting each other, you know, over the spoils for COVID-19 vaccine research, and other organizations doing something similar for the COVID-19 quote unquote relief funds and all of that, right? So I suspect that there was some sort of issue with Charles Lieber in monetization. It was probably a financial thing or something to do with, you know, these different power factions that ultimately have a similar agenda. They have a similar end game, but how they get there, they disagree about, or they disagree about who should get the spoils, or they want to, you know, have more power than that faction, or, you know, whatever. I mean, the predator class, right? They're predatory also among each other, right? So I suspect the Lieber thing has something to do with that. But like I said, unfortunately, since a lot of, there hasn't really been a lot of developments since that arrest was announced earlier this year in connection with that case, it's still kind of hard for me to see where exactly he fits in, but who knows? Maybe sometime soon there'll be some big revelation there. So if it's okay, I'd like to just go into the next one, you know, so we can make sure we get through everything, because we have a lot to cover, right? So talking about wearable tech, the US Army is now going to use soldiers' biometric data, and they're going to obtain that from wearable tech, because, as you'll see here, They want to use basically verify soldiers' identities with biometrics, and it's all going to be based on information they obtain through wearables, which includes, they tell you here, heart rates, gait, meaning how you walk, your physical location, and your unique skin signature. So that seems to be, you know, a step beyond fingerprint even, but it's definitely, you know, a surveillance technology that they've essentially admitted, you know, back after 9/11 total information awareness that we've been talking about. You know, that type of surveillance, this same national security state wants that to be widely adopted by the US populace. And like so many other things the national security state does, they often guinea pig soldiers for this type of stuff, whether it's the anthrax vaccine or things like that, or now it's wearables and a lot of the AI stuff. This is not going to be something for soldiers. They've been promoting this same type of biometric identity verification via wearables. Corporations have talked about using it in the workplace and all of this stuff. Now the government is funding a wearable to see if you will develop COVID-19 before you develop it, right? And all of this stuff. So it definitely, you know, this is just the beginning.
Right.
So,
historically, they use the military almost every time to experiment, like you're saying, and these things always end up trickling down to us. And by the time they get to us and they pretend like it's some new thing they're looking at, and half the time it's usually something that they're well versed on by this point because they've already done these things behind the scenes. It's pretty common practice.
Right. And all the over the course of this year, the military has been preparing to launch what it has been planning for years. It's quote unquote modernization efforts that involve a lot of very Orwellian tech and transhumanist tech that DARPA has quietly been developing ever since the post 9/11 era. And all of that was really started rather augmented on the orders of Dick Cheney, a person that I'm sure T-Lab viewers will know and love very well. So, in terms of, you know, who's behind this, right? So anyway, here it talks about how the Army plans to experiment and prove out wearables with the integrated visual augmentation system. And this is actually a system based in a, you know, enhanced reality or virtual reality helmet. Here they call it artificial intelligence enhanced goggles. The military has bought these Google goggles for soldiers to use starting next year. And I think I mentioned on the show maybe a few episodes back how the military launched the beginning of their modernization efforts, the implementation of all of this AI-driven transhumanist tech stuff last month with something called Project Convergence, and it's still continuing. And they tell you here in this article from Defense News, this last quote here, that they are going to be rolling this stuff out next year. Over the next year, we'll continue to see more and more technologies getting out of the science and technology, meaning research and development domain, right? And getting into final prototyping, experimentation, maturation, and integration. So all of these Orwellian tech initiatives that the military has been talking about in their documents, for example, swarms of drones that are going to be controlled by soldiers' minds through brain implants, you know, that's something that they've been pretty open about, even though it doesn't get on your cable news, but they've been talking about it. That stuff's going to be implemented, these heads-up display, enhanced reality goggles, where AI is going to flag the person soldiers should kill and things like that. AI is now going to be used for targeting in those helmets, and also drones. You know, it's Project Maven, which they said went away, but it actually didn't. And they're doing it now under a different name. And, you know, all of that stuff is going on right now, and it's not being covered at all while we're all, you know, Trump versus Biden, right?
You know what's interesting? In most cases, they tend to use their adversaries to justify the actions that they really wanted to do all along, right? That's a classic move. But what I find, this doesn't seem to be that case. Even the drones, for instance, right? The idea that this needs to be done is because they're claiming that the bad guys are using drones and we have to beat them in this technology. But when we get to this level, they don't seem to be using that same excuse. Right. It's like they're just driving this bus forward based on that same kind of foggy guise that this is to protect us. Right. But they seem to be the ones leading that charge. It's almost like they're just in so many ways ripping off that mask that they used to try to use to cover these things. Because like you're saying, we're wildly more distracted now than we have been in almost ever.
Right. Well, the other thing they do say, right, is like, well, we have to do this first, because if we don't do it first, then the bad guys will do it first. So, you know,
it's just the lazy adaptation of what they were saying before. Now I'll just do it first this time, you know?
Right. Right. I mean, pretty much. So moving on from the military, This story, I mean, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw me lampoon this because it's really insane. So the headline from Wired, this is from a couple days ago. Worried Alexa is spying on you? Edward Snowden's head can help. And basically this person decided to create a disembodied head of Edward Snowden. And so you willingly, voluntarily decide to buy a Amazon or Google spy device, Amazon Echo or Google Nest or whatever. You put it in your house, but then you start to worry, maybe this spy device is spying on me. Well, Wired wants you to think that the solution to that is not to throw away Amazon Echo or Google Nest, but instead buy the disembodied Edward Snowden head, the Hedward Snowden, as Steve Poitras calls it, and place it over your spy device to keep it from spying on you. And so instead of Amazon Echo spying on you, you will have Edward Snowden stare at you creepily all day as you go about your business.
This has to be a joke. Am I crazy?
It's not, though. I mean, I almost wish it was, but I mean, it also is kind of great how stupid these people are.
Right. So before you even read this, like, so to a person who just stumbles across this story, and the vast majority of people who don't ever read past the headline, right? It's why, I mean, obviously Edward Snowden's head, because they want you to think of, you know, the freedom or whatever. Like, it's just the most abstract connect. Why any head? Why not, you know, like you're saying, why not just get rid of the device that not maybe is 100% verifiably is spying on you? But in my question, what is the, so is the head meant to just cover it? And that's the argument, that by covering it, it's hiding? Why not put a sheet over it? Like, I don't understand why you need to buy.
Yeah.
God, I know,
it's really dumb. Well, basically they say there's a copper cylinder hidden inside Edward Snowden, okay? this is actually a hard story to talk about because it's so ludicrous. I can't stop laughing.
It's like a Babylon Bee here.
I know, but it's real. Okay, so now, like, real life is satire, basically. I mean, the Babylon Bee and the Onion and real news headlines, I mean, we're getting to a point where they're really, like, indistinguishable. But anyway, this copper cylinder inside the head is supposed to sit over a home voice assistant like Amazon Echo or Google Home, block it from hearing you and connecting to the internet. Okay.
So why wouldn't you just get rid of it? It's making it useless. I don't even understand the logic this guy's trying to make here.
I guess it's like only if you want to use it sometimes.
So take the gigantic creepy head off the thing. Like, it just doesn't.
Yeah. This is good. Yeah. You want to use it. So you put your Edward Snowden somewhere else, maybe on a mannequin or something, or like, oh, I don't know. This is so crazy. But, you know, this just tells you the insanity of all of this. And the person that made this says Snowden is the saint of privacy.
That's what I thought they were going with it, right?
Okay. So it's like, you know, it's like when people used to put, like, patron saints or, like, you know, statues of the Virgin Mary or whatever in your house, I guess. You can put the patron saint of privacy.
You know what? I have to be honest. That, in a way, makes me even more suspicious of Snowden as an entity. The way that they're, you know what I mean? Like, that just seems like an odd thing to put him out there as the saint of privacy. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And the person that made it says Snowden's the saint of prophecy, saint of privacy, but she's not necessarily anti-Amazon. Right. So she's like, these, you know, the Amazon spy device is cool, but, you know, Edward Snowden's the patron saint of privacy. I mean, it's a little weird. You know, I don't want to get too much into the whole Snowden thing, but it is kind of odd, right, that The Intercept, owned by Pierre Omidyar, shuts down the Edward Snowden archives, and then Edward Snowden never says anything about it, and then he'll come out on Twitter only to really back up, these days anyway, either promote his book or his things, things like that, or to support U.S. Foreign policy objectives, like against Venezuela. He tweeted about that, saying, Venezuela government bad. And then also promoted the whole Navalny poisoning with Novichok, which is, you know, just like, so before there was any information out about that and anyone knew it was a poisoning, he was promoting it, things like that. So, I mean, there are some things to be skeptical about here, but, you know, I don't want to go too into that, but some people get very triggered when you question the potential motives of their patron saints.
Right. But it should be clear to add here whether, and I make this point with Assange too, that regardless of whether we are right, you know, have rightful reasons to be skeptical of either, it doesn't change the fact that what was accomplished is still a positive, right? The information we gained was still a positive, right? So that people, that's the heart, the nuance is the thing that gets killed today. Right?
But it is worth pointing out though, right? Remember that back in the day, there was an issue with the Freedom of the Press Foundation screwing over WikiLeaks and screwing over Assange. And Edward Snowden is on that board, and so is Glenn Greenwald. And they both, you know, unanimously voted to screw over WikiLeaks at that period in time. So, you know, something to keep in mind. Definitely doesn't seem like a lot of solidarity there between Edward Snowden and the WikiLeaks.
Oh, Whitney, you and your facts. Get out of here. We don't need this stuff.
Just write a smear piece about me. You know, because that happened when I reported on that and defended Assange, you know, anyway, good times. Won't go into that. such simpler times years ago when those were the things I worried about. And here we are today. And it's like, you know, the World Economic Forum is going to put an AI in a physical robot body, are the things that we're reporting on now. You know, how times change. Gee whiz. So the World Economic Forum, the Great Reset people, had this article out a day or two ago talking about how we need to now put AI into a physical body so that it can become our new overlords, because if we don't put it in a physical body, it won't become all powerful enough to control everything. So we have to, you know, in order for it to truly understand emotions and, you know, develop a sense of self and become the singularity, we got to put it in a robot body.
I am almost certain that the vast majority, I would say easily Americans, but possibly the world, are adamant about that not being what we ultimately want to achieve. And it just shows you one of these examples of how the ruling class does whatever they want and they frame it as what the people want, you know?
Right, right. Well, you know, a lot of these people in the elite see transhumanism as like the inevitable pinnacle of human evolution for whatever reason. So they think they're like guardians of that.
Right. It's what's good for you, you peons. You don't know what you're too unintelligent to know what we need to be doing. So sit back and put your mask on and we'll decide for you. You know, that's.
Exactly. So I don't want to go into this too much, right? Because we've talked about it a lot and I want to get into some of this election stuff. But I do want to point out that this was published in collaboration with The Conversation, a US mainstream media outlet. So it looks like the World Economic Forum has a series of mainstream media, you know, publishing partners who were promoting some of this Great Reset marketing, you know, gunk.
Which we already know, right? I mean, from Event 201 to any number of examples, they're clearly in this tight-knit group and this whole agenda.
Right. So here, this is just one more example, right? And I actually think one of the editor-in-chief of The Conversation, she may not be there anymore, but she used to be on the board of advisors for NewsGuard, the fake news watchdog backed by Microsoft. So, I mean, you know, they're fun. Obviously a fun crowd. anyway, moving on to then, segueing into some more big tech news. I'm sure people have already seen this to an extent, but, you know, Ryan and I have some different opinions, perhaps, than what you've seen so far about the Google antitrust case. The main thing I wanted to point out is that even though a lot of mainstream media outlets that reported on this were like, yeah, the Department of Justice is taking on Google and they're gonna, you know, break up the monopoly. Consider all the pies Google has its hands in, and then read this. I highlighted it for your convenience. It's only about a monopoly in search and search advertising markets. So it's only search. It's not about Google's monopoly, perhaps with, I don't know, YouTube or any other number of things they're involved with. They're contracting businesses with the military, for example, or the US national security state in general, or any of the other things that Google is involved with. They're not going after them for the monopolies they have in other spheres. It's only for search engines.
I would think that especially Trump supporters would have an issue with that, right? Especially since you just saw a massive purge on Google's YouTube of specifically QAnon and all of these things. And that seems to be the thing there. I mean, we're all upset that you type in something on Google and you get what they want you to see. I mean, I think that's the premise of this. But the idea that they're straight up censoring content of these creators, I argue that's what they're actually upset about. And I think what you're pointing out here is the nuance that they're missing by reading the headline and going, yay, Trump is fighting Google. Right. I mean, it doesn't seem to be exactly what they think is happening.
Exactly. And I would like to remind people that this, you know, is being done by William Barr. Okay. William Barr, his whole career has been CIA stuff, covering up for the CIA, doing the bidding of the CIA. That's where his career started. He, you know, became Attorney General the first time because of his involvement with the CIA during that time when George Bush Sr. was a CIA director. And then during the 1980s was involved with Iran-Contra and Bill Casey. And then he becomes Attorney General under George Bush Sr. and covers up Iran-Contra, the Promise software scandal, numerous other things that went on then. Right. And so we're supposed to believe now that he would take down a company that works very closely with the CIA and was largely created thanks to the CIA, Google. I would argue that William Barr will only break up Google if it's what the CIA wants to happen. Right. So maybe, you know, they want people to think that Google has been broken up. And, you know, they've been taken down a peg, but in reality, Google, instead of, you know, maybe they'll lose a little bit of their search monopoly, but that frees up more of their time and money and employees to be used in all the other things that they're trying to do right now, like become the new, you know, militarized healthcare behemoth, right, and invest in telehealth or Sidewalk Labs, their smart city subsidiary. I mean, clearly Google, well before this lawsuit, had turned its attention to things well beyond search.
Yeah. And, well, we just talked about the shell game of this, right? That, mm-hmm, like, imagine out there for a minute, people that believe that they need to break this up. And we mentioned the Standard Oil analogy and how it's, you know, that was what they wanted to happen back then. And they framed it as the what's good for the people. So imagine they split this up and, you know, two different public-private partnerships and different groups that we don't really have access to. And they, right, all ultimately start achieving the same results. You may think they're different companies, but what if they're all ultimately still achieving the same tainted results that Google was? What do we do then, right? I mean, and the idea is that they're all ultimately connected by some underground network that we don't see. And that's the same thing that happened with Standard Oil, right? So I don't know why we can't consider that's possible. And to your point, the idea that these people that are involved with this are obviously tied to this. And whether we're talking, mm-hmm, I mean, this is something that Caitlin Johnstone makes a lot of good points about in regard to any of these platforms, Google, YouTube, anything. The moment that they have this crossover between the state, which is undeniable, they become state entities, right? And that's how it has, right, to be dealt with. And so when we're doing this, it just seems like another, I think they're throwing this to the people so they think something is happening. And I still argue that I don't think anything will ultimately come of this, like the last few times they brought it up.
Right. No, I definitely agree with that. And as we've talked about before, I am of the opinion, having written about Google for years, that they have fused with the government. You can't, mm-hmm, really, I mean, there's no real line between them anymore. I mean, just look at the National Security Commission on AI, which is leading the AI modernization efforts of the entire U.S. national security state, the military and intelligence communities. It's headed by the former Google CEO, Eric Schmidt, right? And you have Google represented with another person on that board as well. And you have Google doing all this contracting work for the military. They were set up with a lot of NQTEL funding, have ties to the CIA that have persisted for a long time. They worked closely with the NSA, with the PRISM spying, and all of that stuff. So, you know, where does the national security state end and Google begin? You really can't tell anymore, right? And so, right, they're not going after them for that. They're going after them for search and search advertising markets. You know, I mean, if anything comes of this, it'll just mean that, okay, maybe Microsoft's Bing thinks it can like capture more of the market. And oh, good, now the search engine monopoly split between Google and Microsoft. Thank you, Bill Barr, for saving the internet. You know, I mean, it's just so silly, especially when you consider that William Barr talking about, oh, we have to make the internet more free for competition and stuff. This is the guy who has spent his whole tenure as Attorney General, this time with Trump, trying to eliminate encryption and get a backdoor into all encrypted communications for the government, basically making it, you know, so the government can spy on literally everything you do. And this is the guy who's like the new guardian of the internet. Okay, you know.
And don't forget the Earn It Act, which is happening, mm-hmm, now, which is the extension of what you just mentioned, right? They're using child, right, exploitation to basically do exactly what you were saying and remove the at least give them access to anything that they want. And then, yeah, as well, set standards for these online platforms, which will then be used to censor. I mean, it's the same exact thing from a different angle.
Yeah. And anyone who thinks Bill Barr cares about protecting kids, his dad hired Epstein and wrote books about fantasy books about teenage sex slaves. Okay. So that's the guy who, you know, his dad did that, okay? And then we're supposed to think, oh, he wants a backdoor into encryption for everyone to save the children, when actually we know that he's been setting up a predictive policing pre-crime initiative, you know, over the past, like, year and a half or something, right? So what could he possibly want that for, you know?
I'm trying to remember to include a video I did where I deep dive on the Earn It Act in particular, but there, it's something, everyone should go through that. For those that think that it's only about child exploitation, it's pretty damn clear that's not what this is about. So right. I'm trying to include that so you guys can check into that. So let's, yeah, so we don't have to get bogged into that.
Right. So we talked about on the show not that long ago, Google's involvement in Operation Warp Speed, right? Which, interestingly enough, was the stuff we were talking about right before Google-owned YouTube decided to delete the Last American Vagabond channel. I think that's a little interesting. Anyway, now we know that a new big tech company, this is from today in the Wall Street Journal, has been added also to Operation Warp Speed. So not only do we have Google and Oracle both set up with the CIA from the very beginning and involved with them for a long time, but yet another tech behemoth also set up by the CIA with AQTIL funding that for the first several years of its existence as a company, its only client was the CIA, has now joined Operation Warp Speed as well. I'm not going to go too much into this because I plan to do an article about it, and so we'll be covering it again, obviously, but just to point out that this is happening. If you think Operation Warp Speed is not a military CIA operation at this point, you are not paying attention. They are contracting only like CIA linked companies with very shady track records. Palantir, they're not your friends, and this is not good what they're going to be involved with here with Operation Warp Speed. We can go into it a little bit, but they're setting up a new system called Tiberius, and they want you to think this is a Star Trek reference, okay? They're saying they named this after Captain Kirk, whose middle name is Tiberius. I'm a Star Trek nerd, so I will tell you it's actually his Captain Kirk's dad's name. So I really doubt that's why they named it this. I think they named it Tiberius because Tiberius is a well-known Roman emperor and military dictator known for his cruelty. So I think that's likely, more likely when you consider that, you know, Palantir was named after like the orb, the black orb that collects the, you know, the dark wizard guy in Lord of the Rings to like the Mount Doom fire eye of Sauron and stuff, you know. Seems a little more on brand for them to go with the, you know, historic evil military dictator than just the middle name of some Star Trek guy, but you know.
Yeah, it's the way they perceive themselves, right? These are little insights into how they perceive the what they're accomplishing, and they're, you know, no hubris involved at all.
Right, I know. So anyway, you know, Palantir is a Peter Thiel company. Peter Thiel is also behind things like Carbine 911 that we'll be getting to near the end of the show today. But basically this Tiberius thing is basically going to be a giant data mining AI driven operation that they are going to use to determine which critical population in the US gets which particular vaccine candidate. As we talked about before on the show, Operation Warp Speed, now we know it's going to be Palantir doing this, but they planned to identify critical populations, and then each critical population will be assigned one of the six vaccine candidates for Operation Warp Speed, because they're not just going to run with the first one that gets approved and works, and then that's the one for everyone. No, all six of those vaccine candidates they plan to use, and different critical populations will get it. However, how those critical populations will be defined, that's going to be Palantir doing it. And if you go through this article, you will notice that they talk about using a bunch of non-medical data. They don't tell you exactly what it is, but given that Palantir has access to all of the intelligence agencies databases, including the NSA databases, CIA databases that take up all your social media history and all of this stuff, it would be reasonable to assume that they're just going to lump in all the data they have and use it for whatever they want. It's also worth pointing out that Palantir has a sub label that can be placed on individuals for subversive, for being a dissident, that they sell to the government, right? So they've been flagging people as dissident for the intelligence community. Palantir contracts to all 17 U.S. intelligence agencies. So it's much more than just having the CIA in its origins. This is the data mining company of the U.S. intelligence community that is going to be doing this and deciding who gets what vaccine. And it's going to be the military distributing it. And as we've talked about before, the vaccine contracts are secret, and everyone that gets one is going to be surveilled by still unspecified means that are going to know what's going inside your body, going on inside your body somehow for 24 months after this is happening. So yeah, Operation Warp Speed continues to get shadier by the day. And I really hope that more people in independent media start speaking up about this, because right, whether Trump or Biden wins or whatever happens on November 3rd, this is something that they plan to roll out, that they say they're hoping to give to minimum 300 million Americans. So, you know, that's something that's going to affect pretty much everybody. So maybe we should talk about this now and not wait until they're about to roll it out to raise, you know, raise the red flags about this, right, and point out what's wrong here.
And I again want to add the point that we're talking, I don't get the disconnect between people, and this, these kind of points apply to both sides, but specifically because Trump is leading Operation Warp Speed, that's why it applies in this way, that we're talking about an obvious, overwhelming, continuous, in multiple ways, ties to the CIA. What happened to the deep state coup of Donald Trump? Right? I mean, how does that make sense that you're working with the, and it's not just, you know, oh, it's the white hats within the CIA. We're talking about a multifaceted, numerous examples of the CIA. Like, clearly this is tied up with the CIA and military intelligence, but we're pretending that there's this deep state coup against Trump from exactly the CIA. It just, well, we need to see these things.
It makes sense when you, if you view QAnon as an intelligence psyop of itself, then it all makes sense, right? It's worth pointing out that Palantir, you know, that's Peter Thiel, who backed Trump for a very long time and basically was very involved in the Trump transition team. And a lot of key Trump appointments early on were essentially made by Peter Thiel, right? So, you know, you can't really separate Trump from Peter Thiel that easily. Also, we need to stop, people need to stop calling Peter Thiel a libertarian. Peter Thiel likes to identify himself as a libertarian. He's clearly not. I mean, he's building a police state that's like not libertarian. Okay, thanks. So
they're aggressively trying to bastardize these words today. I have a stick. I have an issue that drives me crazy in regard to anarchy, because right now you've got open statists waving anarchy flags, and so everybody suddenly thinks that they're anarchy. It's chaos. We don't understand what these words mean. Libertarians, Trump's era really did damage to what libertarians are, because a lot of people think that they're supporting Trump and still libertarians. It doesn't make any sense, you know?
No,
so we just gotta be careful about how they abuse these words. The same thing with like deep state or regime change. At one point, these terms were conspiracy theory, and now they mean what they want them to mean. We say deep state, people think the Democrats, and that's not even close to what it means, right? That's how these games work.
Exactly. Good point. So with that being said, here's another article on it for people that are interested, because the Wall Street Journal one's paywall. But in the show notes, we put in an archive link, so you should be able to read the whole thing despite the paywall. But in the event you can't, you can read the Business Insider version, which gives a pretty decent summary. Anyway, moving on to the meat of today's episode, we were going to talk about a lot of these new revelations they're saying, and warnings and things that have come to light just recently, right, about how Iran and Russia and China are going to totally destroy the 2020 election. And, you know, if you have only been reading mainstream media this whole time, you know, those types of narratives are probably only just starting to come up on your radar. I would encourage everyone watching to go to my website, Unlimited Hangout. You can click here and then click on Investigative Series. Go to my Cyber Reason series. This is part 3, but I recommend you read all 3 parts. But part 3, published in on January 28th of this year, long before any of this was obvious to a lot of people, how government and media are prepping America for a failed 2020 election. Russia, China, and Iran are already being blamed for using tech to undermine the 2020 election, yet the very technologies they are allegedly using were created by a web of companies with deep ties to Israeli intelligence.
I want to add that there's people right now that are discussing this online, that this is the exact reason why TLAV was censored, because Whitney called this on the show, and they can't have evidence of us literally calling what they're planning in such an open way. You know, who knows for sure whether that's the case, but at least one of them. But I happen to agree. I think this is the kind of thing that you jump so far ahead of their plan that just can't be left out in the open, you know?
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, if all of this does, you know, go live the way Cybereason and some of these other intelligence linked entities predicted, you know, it becomes problematic for them to explain, how could someone like me know it was going to happen before it happened? You know right. what I mean? And then, right. well, you know, it starts to unravel things they don't really want unraveled. But anyway, I point out here in January 28th of this year, how all during last year, a lot of the same players we're seeing now saying, oh, it's Iran, China, and Russia. We're all saying we're doing this last year, and that a lot of the technologies and tactics that they're allegedly going to use and the infrastructure they're allegedly going to attack, it's not these three adversarial nation states that are all up in there potentially with the potential to wreak havoc. It's actually you know, Israel or Israeli intelligence or companies tied to Unit 8200, and also Microsoft, which of course, as I've talked about before on the show, has very close ties to Unit 8200. Bill Gates has very close ties to the Maxwell sisters. Not just, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein, Bill Gates' ties to the Epstein network, they go back to the 1990s. Obviously, there's obvious reasons why they haven't, you know, people have been asleep at the wheel reporting that and specifically. But if you go to another series on my Unlimited Hangout site called the Maxwell Family Business, you read the second one about Isabel Maxwell. It goes all into Isabel Maxwell, her ties to the Israeli tech scene and Israeli intelligence, and her very close ties to Bill Gates. Microsoft has been very involved in this for a very long time. They were also one of the first major Silicon Valley company to open an R&D center in Israel back in 1989, where they began specifically recruiting Israeli intelligence hackers and things like that, including people involved in the Promise software, which of course also involves the Maxwell family. So don't want to go too far in there. Let's get into some of the stuff that's going on more recently. But for people that want to see how this has been developed, you know, they've been developing this narrative for a long time, I encourage you to go back and read this article in this series. So moving on, early on in this year in March, we had a DHS official. This is after my Cyber Reason series came out, and I was saying that Election Day was going to be the new 9/11. That's how they were setting this up. 11/3, November 3rd, the election. I was saying 11/3 is going to be the new 9/11. Well, not that long after I was talking about that and with my Cyber Reason series and all of this, you have a senior DHS official saying that the U.S. is on the doorstep of another 9/11. Interesting, right? So the lady that said this was Elizabeth Newman, who's Assistant Secretary for Threat Prevention and Security Policy in the Office of Strategy, Policy, and Plans at DHS. That's a mouthful. Anyway, she said, online platforms are catalyzing hate, okay? So basically this new 9/11 she's warning about, it's the internet's fault. That's what she's setting up here in her testimony when she's talking about all this stuff.
Can't have that free speech out there, right? That's just too damaging
And exactly, she's talking about parts of speech that need to be regulated, you know, the online side, talking about, you know, all these other things. But here's the quote I really want people to pay attention to that she said earlier this year. Every counterterrorism professional I speak to in the federal government and overseas feels like we are at the doorstep of another 9/11. So before I finish the quote, just take that in for a second. This top official at DHS, every counterterrorism professional she talks to that works in the U.S. government or foreign governments that are allied with the U.S., they all say another 9/11 is coming and then we are at the doorstep of it. That is in March of this year. Okay. So, you know, this is so much like before 9/11, the new Pearl Harbor narrative that was promoted not just by PNAC in September 2000, but throughout the earlier half of 2001 by a lot of, I've talked about before, a lot of these media outlets that were owned by this CIA asset, the South Korean guy who was a cult leader. That promoted the answer people who were involved in Dark Winter. Don't want to go too much into that, but they were all saying a new Pearl Harbor, a new Pearl Harbor over and over again. They were repeating it, that there's going to be a domestic terror attack on U.S. soil and that the first responders are going to be firemen and all of this stuff. This was seated so heavily in the media, in specific media outlets, really, before 9/11, and also by, you know, national security officials. Of course, there wasn't a DHS at the time because 9/11 was used to justify the creation of DHS, but it's definitely worth pointing all of this out. And then you have one of the top officials at DHS's CISA, which, as I've talked about before, is in charge of protecting the critical infrastructure of the U.S. and is currently run by a former senior executive at Microsoft. This guy at CISA is saying, based off of current events and the frequency of events, okay, that's a bunch of like, there's like nothing, there's no substance there. Right. I just want to put that out. Okay. Based off of current events that I won't specify and the frequency of events, which I also won't specify, I am convinced that this country is becoming more and more violent every single day. Oh, okay. But a lot of the violence we're seeing, like we just saw with this Whitmer plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer, right? FBI entrapment, 100%. The ringleader of that plot was an FBI informant that was paid $24,000 to set that up for the FBI. And the FBI comes in writing in the last minute to foil the plot that they paid $24,000 to create. Okay. So, you know, yeah, it's becoming more and more violent because you assholes are doing it, you know?
And James Corbett actually gave you a shout out on the show where you made that prediction before it. He said, and Whitney Webb called this and the same idea, right? That and it's always important to remember in two points in this, that the FBI, even according to the New York Times, is caught at the time they reported this, it was something like 90% of the things they've stopped, they've had a hand in creating. That's what the New York Times, and that's incredible to think about. But also the idea that that Trump himself had said that the country needs another 9/11 like event to bring everybody together. Yes. So it's another instance of them saying another new Pearl Harbor, and you know, and here we are in his administration, and maybe
exactly.
That's what's happening.
How do we unite the United States since it's so divided? How do we bring everyone together to build back better? Well, I think that quote you just dropped kind of highlights what their plan is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to point out this too, because we talked about this a few shows ago, how I was saying there's going to be this false flag attack later on in the year, this bioterror event that they've been talking about. They're going to say it's white supremacist and domestic violent extremist working with Islamic extremist groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Well, here you have FBI Director Christopher Wray saying that racist, violent extremist movements, you know, white supremacists, are now on the same footing as ISIS, okay? So they've been setting this up all year. And now after the Governor Whitmer plot created by Christopher Wray's FBI, you have people in mainstream media calling white supremacists vanilla ISIS. Ah, interesting how that played out. It's not at all like Christopher Wray predicted that very narrative months prior. So good job, mainstream media. Anyway, so here's another thing we have here where they're setting up this whole thing about that white supremacists have made this global network and they're working with Islamic extremists. Here's another quote from another US government official here. We have seen some domestic terrorist subjects reference foreign individuals over the course of their own radicalization process, as well as attempt to live stream their attacks, mirroring what people overseas have done. Okay, so then he goes on to say, the internet transcends borders. So too, the ideas that are propagated on it. To that end, we have seen some domestic terrorism subjects travel overseas, some to conflict zones for combat training.
Let me ask you this, Whitney. Do you think that they're actually arguing, and this is the part that I just can't seem to get past, do you think that they're actually arguing that these people are working with Islamic extremists and Iran in there, or that they're becoming the same kind of problem? What do you, you know, is it specifically they're working with them?
Yeah,
is that what they're saying?
I think now the point where they are in the narrative they're promoting is that they're a similar problem. But as I pointed out in the show previously about the bioterror attack and all of that stuff, they're essentially setting up a foundation to make a direct link between the two. Right. And so in addition to what we covered on that show, I would argue that this quote is another sort of foundational building block, because they're saying what is uniting these white supremacists and the Islamic extremists is anti-Semitism, for real.
I know.
Anti-Semitism and similar ideologies of hatred. This is what's bringing them together. She's, you know, the people testifying from DHS are talking about Auschwitz and all this stuff. And it's like all tied up with anti-Semitism. The same hearing where all of this stuff was going down, they had the Anti-Defamation League Come and Speak. They had, it's farther down in the document. They're talking about Jewish community specifically.
Well, just to finish my thought, the point was just simply, and again, it's not this, I've made this same thing before. I feel like I'm going crazy sometimes with where the world is right now, where we can literally be staring at a group that identifies itself as white supremacists that are then saying, well, sure, because we both don't like this group, we're going to challenge everything that we think, our foundational beliefs. Like, how is that even something that people are going, oh, okay, uh-huh. Like, that makes sense. It's just incredible to me that these are the kind of clumsy narrative they're trying to push in just because they jam them together and then we could just go after it all at the same time. It just is incredible to me. You know what right. I mean? The last time I'll say it, I just can't get around how dumb that is.
Right. And so what's also weird here, I just noticed this line in here. So CISA, which is led by the former Microsoft executive that promotes the Unit 8200, PSYOP, the CTI League that we've covered before, right? And promotes Election Guard, former Microsoft executive who's in charge of, like, you know, protecting all of the critical infrastructure. Okay, so they partnered and did another one of these tabletop exercises, just like Cyber Reason. Okay, they did it with a bunch of interagency, meaning multiple federal agency, federal officials, law enforcement personnel, but also they did these simulations specifically with, they call them here Jewish community leaders, but I remember reading about this. It was a lot of people tied up with the Israel lobby. So, you know, it's very frequent. We see in the US that the Israel lobby in the US, sometimes they like to disguise themselves as Jewish community leaders, when in fact there are a lot of Jewish communities within the United States that identify as anti-Zionist or critical of Israel, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway,
it's as well as in Israel.
Right, exactly. And so it's interesting to see tabletop exercises, you know, like these simulations and all of that stuff. You know, Cyber Reason was doing them around the same time, right, about the election chaos. Well, you have CISA doing it with these same partners, all about domestic terrorism and white supremacy. So, you know, it's interesting to see that narrative. And also, as I pointed out last time on the show, the origin of this claim that white supremacists are going to be working with Islamic extremism and extremists and potentially Iran comes from an Israeli counterterrorism official that also works with NATO and is very, very involved with, you know, Israel's, you know, government and national security state. And, you know, he's the origin of this. We went through his whole report and how it was based on just like complete, like just really insane stuff that makes no sense, and how he was stringing this stuff together. It's very clear that the narrative they're trying to build and sell here has no basis in reality. It's just a narrative they're trying to spin together because, they have certain groups they want to blame for a particular reason. So they're trying to amalgamate them, mm-hmm. you know, or aggregate them all and be like, all the people we don't like are the bad guys all at the same time. And that's why we're seeing now, right, with the election. Oh, well, it's Iran, China, and Russia. I'm sure we'll see North Korea at some point thrown in here too. Like, have all the guys we don't like together. And, you know, I mean, that seems to be how this is going.
It seems all the best misinformation that drives U.S. policy stems back to the Israeli government. I mean, the Iran situation with Bolton before he was gone is another perfect example, you know, where that whole thing that kicked off the limpet mines and the drone was all lies from Israel, which we now know, you know, it's just, right. It's always how this goes.
Well, I brought up on the show previously, I don't have the link up today, but you can go and look this up. I think it was Business Insider or some other mainstream media outlet saying, quoting Israeli government officials, Israel wants the U.S. to get involved in a war with Iran before Trump leaves office. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they're, you know, Israel's government is admitting that they want the U.S. to get involved in a conflict with Iran essentially before the year is over, before another president could potentially be inaugurated. Right. Okay. So this is relevant, people. You know, mm-hmm. It's not just something, you know, this could have really major consequences. Anyway, going back to things that have happened recently about this Iranian interference in elections that they've been predicting forever, and oh, look, now it's happening. So apparently these threatening letters, vote for Trump or we will come after you emails, U.S. intelligence says it came from Iran. Okay. Trust U.S. intelligence. They never lie.
You've gotten it wrong before, right?
Yeah, it's coming from the Director of National Intelligence, who, until John Ratcliffe was there, it was Richard Grenell, lifelong operative for the Israel lobby. Mm-hmm. I've written about that before on several occasions. So now his successor is saying, we promise it's Iran. And it claimed to have been from the Proud Boys, but it was really ran, they say. And as we'll get to in a moment now, because of this, the Proud Boys are now calling for war with Iran and rallying Trump's base to support, you know.
Oh, isn't that convenient? It drives it right into the narrative.
Yes. It's almost like when they tried to do this last time, QAnon, there was a Q drop supporting war with Iran and saying, time to bomb Iran.
Surprise, surprise.
Funny how that works.
But yeah. This is another dumb example of what we were just saying. Like, so white supremacists are working with what they hate. And then we have Iran, who Trump has been wildly aggressive toward defending him. Sure. No question anything. These are dumb. These are just intellect. These just don't make sense. Did they try to explain why that would even add up in the article?
No. Because they don't feel like they need to anymore. They're like, this is what U.S. intelligence says. I mean, we saw this shift to a huge degree in media after 2016, especially with all the Russiagate stuff. This is really what set the foundation for this type of reporting being normalized and super widespread. People reading only the headlines, and it only cites anonymous U.S. intelligence officials or a handful of named U.S. intelligence officials. Mm-hmm. And it's in, you know, the job of the intelligence community to lie to you, right? Exactly. That's what they do. That's what they've done forever. So why would they do anything different now? But unfortunately, you know, a lot of media outlets are just running with it for whatever reason.
Of course.
So not only do we have anonymous intelligence officials saying Iran bad, and they're coming for your election, okay, but now we have Google just today, our friends at Google, who we were just talking about, saying that an Iran-linked disinformation campaign targeted 25,000 Gmail users right after U.S. intelligence said Iran was also bad. Because, as we talked about earlier, Google and the U.S. intelligence community have fused, but this makes it sound different, doesn't it? Like, oh, look, now there's two separate entities saying Iran is doing bad things. Oh, wait, they're actually kind of the same entity if you take the time to think about it.
Now, what is, and I haven't seen this article yet. Is there any, like, what are they, is it the information about the accounts that were supposedly hacked and how they know it was Iran? Of course, that ties back to unnamed U.S. officials, I'm guessing, right? I'm assuming.
I'll just direct your attention to this quote. So here it says, Iran linked disinformation campaign, but then we get down here, a suspected Iranian disinformation campaign.
That is some grade A journalism right there. Wow.
And Iran is naughty because they sent evil spoofed emails.
We think, right?
Yes. Yes, these naughty, naughty Iranians sending emails they should not send.
It's this kind of journalism is why I genuinely believe that even the people who promote this stuff, most of them also think that there's nothing there, but they don't care there's nothing there because they just want to promote this idea. Like, we don't, it's the two-party system, right? The facts no longer matter if you've taken a side in that argument. And that's what a lot of people are doing right now.
Right. So here's basically Google's suspected Iranian disinformation campaign. So suspected Iranian actors, because remember earlier, they don't actually know it's Iran. That's why it's suspected Iranian disinfo campaign. Okay, so they attempted to distribute a video that implies individuals can cast fraudulent ballots even from overseas. Okay, but Google said it removed the videos, but it would not clarify what these videos actually contained. So it's a mystery video no one has seen and they will not release, and no one knows what it says. But Google says it is naughty and it will incite social unrest, and it had to be removed, and they're coming for our elections, but you can't see the video.
And of course, because we know that it's just simply impossible for there to be fraudulent ballots in, right? That just can't happen, right? Like, that's their argument, that this thing that is very clearly possible is not allowed to be said. Yeah, that makes sense with where Google is today.
Right.
Let's continue.
And notice how the subhead, where they go and they start talking about the alleged Iranian emails U.S. intelligence says that were supposedly from the Proud Boys, actually Iran. This is the subheading they use. We will come after you. Okay, so this, you know, for people that may not see what's going on here, this is the media attempting to get, you know, people that aren't wise to what's going on to associate Iran with, we will come after you. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh no, Iran wants to attack us. Right. I mean, this is so blatant. It couldn't be even more blatant.
They have to find a way to make the average American think that they're at risk from this thing that they want you to, that they want to go after. Right. They need that consent to a degree that America, that's why they use emotions. That's why they make fake, the false flags. They pretend civilians are being attacked because they want Americans to go, no, that can't be allowed. Right. And that's what they're trying to do here. It's just pathetic, right. Quite pathetic.
So earlier I mentioned, right, Microsoft ties to Unit 8200. I've mentioned before on the show that Eric Schmidt, the ex-Google CEO, he set up with the former commander of Unit 8200 something called Team 8 that just hired, former CIA NSA director Mike Rogers, and also pays another former NSA director Keith Alexander a bunch of money also, right? So why would Google perhaps want to make Iran look bad at this point of time? Well, I would argue part of it has to do that it coincides neatly with what US intelligence is trying to do. But it turns out Google also announced on the same day that this story came out. So same day this Google publicly announces an Iranian leaked disinfo campaign, Google announces that it is going to start funding Middle Eastern news projects that develop new business models. What could be in here? So basically what it says is Google has given $2 million to different news organizations via what they call the Google News Initiative Innovation Challenge in the region. Well, that sounds fun.
GNI is not new though, right? Google News Initiative, that's been around for a minute. This is just adaptation to that?
The Innovation Challenge.
Right, that's the adaptation to it. That's interesting.
Yeah. So an excuse for them to give around money to help journalism thrive in the digital age, but only the outlets they like, because all of the ones they don't like, they kick off of YouTube and deperson and remove them from Google.
They're trying to create the scenario that they have control of on YouTube, but all around the world, right? They want to be able to, like they're removing content. We're saying it's the same idea over there. Why would we trust that Google has the interest of just truthful news with what they're doing on YouTube? It's simple. It's clear.
Right. So what they're doing here, they're saying they're looking to specifically in the Middle East, proposals were asked to focus on projects that increase reader engagement and or explore new business models to build a stronger future for journalism. Okay. So I wonder who got all the money for this. Oh, wait, what? Israel had the largest number of successful applicants, with four initiatives securing funding. Shock. One of them, Ynet, which you may know if you write about or read about Israeli politics, is a super pro Netanyahu and Likud and far right in Israel. Anyway, Ynet got all this money from Google to focus on the automation and distribution of content from large structured data sets, such as election results and public school rankings. So basically articles written by artificial intelligence, and then they're put out there for everyone to read and,
I mean, and the tie-in with them censoring based on the claim of anti-Semitism becomes wildly relevant when Google is giving most of the money for their Middle East news program to Israel's government. I mean, it's just too ridiculous. Right. That's the subtitle of today.
Right. And the other ones that they funded are from the other ones they name in here that they funded are from the United Arab Emirates, which of course just forged this new peace deal with Israel, right? And now Emirati oil is going to pass through southern Israel to go to Europe, and now they're getting Google money too for new partnerships to spread this around. Here's the other one based in Abu Dhabi, right? Here's one from an Iraqi British journalist I'm not familiar with that outlet, but yeah, they're basically Google's trying to remake the news landscape in the Middle East by funding outlets that are, you can pretty much guess, are not, big fans of Iran, right? So, moving on. a month ago, I just wanted to point out that, a lot of this media narrative that they're promoting now because of these recent press conferences and all this stuff about election meddling and the domestic terror threat and all of this stuff, they were doing the same thing exactly a month ago It started around like September 24th. And for like about a week, they like heavily promoted this stuff. And then they waited a couple weeks. And now we're at the same time in the next month, right before the election, and they're promoting it again. And it's actually been like this most of the year. They've picked specific times where they heavily promote the narrative and then it goes away. And then after a couple weeks, it comes back, and then, you know, just kind of how it's been working, I guess. But here's Voice of America, state-funded U.S. media. U.S. intelligence reports warn of extremist threat around election. I mean, they've been telling you for a long time, but I found this quote to be really crazy because you have another DHS guy, basically. You have this witch's brew that really hasn't happened in America's history. And if it has, it's been decades, if not centuries. So a once in a century type event. Very interesting to see that here in U.S. state-funded media. The witch's brew thing, I think, is odd.
Yeah.
To see that term, you know, we're close to Halloween. You know,
it's also all of the they're basically saying, you know, all those things we keep hinting at happening, they're all going to come together at the same time. That's what they're basically telling you right there.
Yes. So that's why it's important to look at this stuff. And then so you had that last month, and then you have The Guardian again promoting serious and intense white supremacist domestic terror threat in the U.S. courtesy of the FBI entrapment plots that are created. So anyway, to round this off, you know, we have the New York Times, Iran and Russia seek to influence election in the final days, U.S. officials warn. But actually, U.S. officials have been warning that it will be Iran and Russia this whole time since for over a year. So it's not a final days thing. It's that they want to convince you in the final days that it's them.
There's examples of this, as we pointed out before, as far back as 2016. I mean, they've been floating these things right after the election, clearly.
Right. So, really quick, I'll just go through the rest of these. Yeah. And then around the same time, when is this? October 6th. Delayed Homeland Security report warns of lethal white supremacy. So like all, I mean, you know, the past month, they've really been seeding this harder than they ever have this whole time, which in my opinion, you know, we had it pop up, bubble up, you know, every 2 months or so for the past year and a half. And then over the course of the past month, as we're leading up to the day where they say all of this stuff is going to come together in election day, we have them seeding it harder than ever, having it everywhere, you know, on cable news and in, you know, the biggest media outlets, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, all of this stuff. It really seems like they plan to run with it. Oh yeah, here's the one on the Proud Boys saying, this means war with Iran because Iran impersonated us and now we have to support the war on Iran. Okay, great. This article came out today, and I wanted to point it out. It's at Wired. By the way, the Wired people are also on the board of Microsoft NewsGuard. Just would like to point that out really quick. Anyway, these 12 cyber threats that they talk about in here, in this article out today, are literally all of the same cyber threats, piece for piece, that are in the cyber reason simulations about election doom and gloom for November 3rd, 2020, that they started gaming out about a year ago. And I mean, and they even cite cyber reason in this article. It's so nuts.
For those that may not remember, give the breakdown quickly of what cyber reason is and is run by, and because that's important.
Okay, so Cyber Reason is this company that starting, I think it was last November, they were doing these simulations of complete chaos via cyber attacks conducted by nation state actors with U.S. federal officials. You had DHS there, you had the Secret Service there. It's no coincidence we're seeing so many of these warnings coming from DHS, right? Because they were gaming this out with Cyber Reason. So who is Cyber Reason? I encourage people to go back and read my series because I don't want to go too in-depth in the interest of time, but essentially Cyber Reason is a company that was set up by former Unit 8200 hackers. The current CEO and co-founder, Lior Div, used to be the head of Israel's offensive hacking of nation states unit at Unit 8200. His job was to hack offensively and aggressively nation states like Iran. Fancy that. Lior Div is on the record saying, I believe it was at the beginning of last year, that his work at Cyber Reason is a continuation of his service to Unit 8200. So he's essentially admitting it's a front company. I mean, that's convenient for me as someone who reported on this. I'm like, well, it couldn't be more obvious. So now we know where this is going. But beyond that, if you look at the history of Lior Div, career history after Unit 8200 and the other two co-founders, Lior Div, after Unit 8200, went to work for Amdocs. And the other two co-founders worked for a subsidiary of what used to be called Converse Infosys and is now Verint Inc. Both Converse Infosys and Amdocs were very involved with Israeli espionage scandals going on during the time period that the 9/11 attacks took place. And there is a heavily censored, but you can still find it around, Fox News mini, I guess you could call it like a mini documentary series or investigative series of video reports done by Carl Cameron that basically talk about Amdocs and Converse Infosys spying on the US federal government and doing a bunch of shady stuff in the lead up to 9/11. So interesting to see those individuals, you know, what they were doing at Unit 8200, that they admit what they do now is a continuation of their time in Israeli intelligence. They were involved with these companies that have been known to aggressively spy on the U.S. federal government right before a major false flag event. And then here they are gaming out all this stuff with DHS officials right before the election. And now we're getting close, very close, just a few weeks away, right, from the day they say is going to be this new 9/11. And Wired is saying these are the 12 cyber attacks that could wreak havoc on the election, and piece for piece, it's everything Cyber Reason said would happen. This includes attacks on, well, I can go through them really quick, but of course it's talking about, I mean, right away they're saying Iran and Russia, and you know, all this stuff in here talking about what the FBI has been warning about all year. Let's see, talking about how U.S. Cyber Command, which is led by the wife of an AIPAC board member, partnering with a consortium of private sector partners, including Microsoft. They've been, you know, trying to keep us safe. So, you know, that's a public-private partnership, right? Just like Warp Speed, you know, let's trust Microsoft to never do anything bad. You know, and that's why it's so insane that the guy in charge of protecting election infrastructure in the US is a Microsoft executive, because Microsoft has the Election Guard software it wants rolled out nationwide, and they can't really justify that unless there's a big problem this election with the election system. And then they can be like, well, we need Election Guard now, which was developed by Microsoft and DARPA. Essentially.
Right. Even within the smaller parts of the greater narrative, we have to ask ourselves, Cape Ono, right? Who benefits? That's always a question to ask. And there's your answer. Right.
So just like Cyber Reason warned, this is more like CTI League, really, ransomware attacks. But beyond that, voter data manipulation. The OSET Institute is involved with Election Guard. Surprise, surprise. Talking about a pre-election undetected attack could tamper with voter lists, creating huge confusions and delays, disenfranchisement. It could compromise the validity of the election. All of this stuff. Day of vote interruption. This is something that was also predicted by Cyber Reason as well. Vote manipulation, Cyber Reason didn't predict, but messing with reporting, they did predict, you know, fake news, misinformation, hijacking of news websites, things like that. It's all straight from the Cyber Reason thing. This is more a CTI League thing, but CTI League is another group that's related to the same network that I wrote about more recently, because they were essentially created after Cyber Reason stopped doing their simulations. Infrastructure attacks. Here they directly cite Cyber Reason predicting the infrastructure attacks, right? And this is a quote from Cyber Reason's Sam Curry. If you can prevent people from getting to the polls, if you can effectively disenfranchise certain segments of the population, that's far more disruptive to the republic than taking out a few voting machines. Interesting. Then they're talking about hack and dumps like the Biden emails. This is another one Cyber Reason predicted: misleading voting information, voter targeted disinformation, also predicted by them, social media threats, also predicted by Cyber Reason. Here they're saying that Donald Trump himself will meddle in the election merely by tweeting. That's not very fair, but you know. Anyway, and then we have another group, Memory, saying U.S.-based neo-Nazi groups will commit terror attacks on Election Day, attacking infrastructure and driving into crowds. Driving into crowds is something that Cyber Reason predicted. They said that vehicles would be rammed into voters waiting in line to vote at polling places. So, Cyber Reason's simulated death count for that was in the hundreds. I mean, so crazy. And they were so gleeful over their exercise. I mean, you should really go read my series to see some of the quotes from these people and what they had to say about the events they simulated. Honestly, right. Chilling stuff.
You can't really argue that a neo-Nazi group has the ability to affect infrastructure without tying them to a state actor. And then there you go.
Right. Exactly. See, when I said it on the show a couple weeks ago, I was like, this may sound insane, but watch how this plays out. And right. Here we are. And now it's starting to come together. Right. Yep. These people are so predictable. They're not creative. They just, you know, have a lot of control over the narrative to an extent now, but they're losing it. Anyway, going back to what I mentioned a little bit ago, how they started seeding this this narrative that's now in overdrive as we get closer to the election. They started this last month. We had this headline from ProPublica. It's republished on NextGov, but it's originally from ProPublica, going out saying foreign hackers cripple Texas County's email system. You're like, oh no, we have to be so worried about our election. Okay, so reading that headline, because so much of media today, people only look at Twitter, Facebook, and they see the headline and the subtitle and they make assumptions. And this is this, you know, headline is clearly there to like drum up fear about the foreign hacker threat from Iran, Russia, and China. Well, if you read down, who are the naughty hackers? Sri Lanka and the Congo. So those naughty Sri Lankan and Congolese hackers who hate us for our freedoms and have to just, you know, teach us a lesson. Oh, man. I mean, it's so crazy.
It's a sad point, but it's, I mean, that's a second paragraph. And you're probably right that 90% of people that retweeted this are thinking Iran and Russia. It's really sad.
Well, that's the point. I would argue that's why they did it, honestly. Because, okay, so you got some, your election office got some spam emails from Sri Lanka and the Congo. I mean, my email is like full of spam from like, I don't even know how many countries. So right. I'm sorry, the email lady at that Texas office, like can't handle it. Like, I don't think that's a national security threat that you're getting like spam from Sri Lanka lady, but whatever. ProPublica said it, so.
Must be real.
Right. So around the same time that was coming out from ProPublica, we had the FBI warning of likely election night disinformation from foreign forces, which is something also that Cyber Reason predicted that is also in that newly published Wired article. So, you know, the FBI has been seeding this narrative for a while. And then here at the same day that they were saying election night disinformation from foreign forces, the FBI also said cyber threats could delay voting, right? Most of these are the FBI and CISA working together, and it's, you know, that's kind of been the case since last year. And then here we go again. This is from this July. You had the National Security Agency, DHS, DHS's CISA saying foreign hackers are going to target U.S. critical infrastructure. Remember, as I said before, two former NSA directors now work or receive money from Unit 8200 front companies, and CISA is run by a former Microsoft executive.
I just don't, at what point did we accept like the precognition of these intelligence agencies? Like they just know when things are going to happen because of the intelligence that we never actually get to see. That's a shift that's definitely happened in a not too recent past, right? Where it's just like, we accept that they know that these things are going to come to pass, even though they don't ever show it to us. I just don't understand how we accept that as a people.
Right. Good point. And I also want to stress why we're going over this stuff about like these attacks on critical infrastructure. Remember back to before Julian Assange was deplatformed, his internet was cut off, okay? And there was this publication of the Vault 7 documents. Okay, so what did that show? It showed that the CIA has a hacking unit that has a program called Umbridge. And what Umbridge can do is that it allows you to conduct offensive cyber attacks, but place the fingerprints, okay, of a different foreign actor to make it look a different, like a different country did it, so that the CIA could conduct a foreign attack on a country, leave fingerprints of China, Russia, or Iran. Because the Vault 7 also showed you the fingerprints that the CIA had in its possession at the time. And one of them was an alleged Iranian program called Shamoon. And if you actually look at a lot of the documentation over the past year where they're claiming Iran has been encroaching in critical infrastructure, it's that same exact program. Go back to my Cyber Reason series. I pointed all out. So
it's very relevant.
So this particular warning from July, they're saying foreign hackers are targeting critical infrastructure. So what are they actually saying? Well, this is what they say. They had seen evidence of email spear phishing attacks. Okay, so like phishing emails. They'd seen evidence that phishing emails may have been sent that could have been used to gain access to critical infrastructure networks. Okay, so.
This is just, that sounds, could have so been, right. Maybe phishing that could have been used to possibly do this. And that's what their sell point is. And all of them are like this, right? They're all the same kind of shoddy, undefined.
Okay. Exactly. Here's CISA's, CISA issued an alert in February, an unnamed facility, you know, and they didn't give you any information about what have happened. Here's Ann Nuremberger, whose husband is on the board of AIPAC, and her parents were rescued by Benjamin Netanyahu's brother. She's in charge of all of NSA's cybersecurity stuff. Operational technology assets are pervasive and underpin many national security functions. These are what the OTs, operational technology assets, that's what they're saying up here, are the those naughty phishing attacks. We're trying to access those assets, right? So she's being cited in here. Then you have, who else does this article cite? Oh, the head of Israel's National Cyber Directorate. Oh, very good. Okay, so get ready. Iran's coming for you right at the time Israel wants us to go to war with Iran. It couldn't be more obvious. Anyway, here's another one from, this is from 2017, actually, because they've been saying this a long time. Advanced and persistent cyber threats against utilities. Okay. And here's another one from last year. Chinese state hackers suspected, right? Of malicious cyber attack on U.S. utilities.
This while Israel has admitted to numerous attacks, and the mainstream media of the U.S. has written about their numerous attacks of cyber attacks on Iran.
In the past year.
Yeah, constantly. And that's, we're so concerned. God, it's crazy.
Yes, I know. And so here's another one. This is from June of last year, U.S. saying growing Iranian cyber threat using destructive attacks. I point out in numerous articles these claims that these cyber threats are actually Iranian are just based on a bunch of there's no actual evidence. What they say is we have medium to high confidence that this is the case. They always use that term for real. These like cybersecurity officials, most of whom that they cite are actually Israeli or tied to the Israeli government. They'll say medium to high confidence that it's an Iranian group because the actions taken in the cyber attack mimic those of a group that was previously linked to Iran with medium to high confidence.
You know? God, that's pathetic.
It is, but you know, if you run the headline as saying, like we saw earlier, right, it was Iran, and then you read down in the actual paragraph and it says suspected Iranian attack because there's no actual evidence. I mean, they do this all the time, and it's all about making people think, you know, this is what's going to happen. So that way, when a big cyber attack does take place, the first people, first country people think could have been responsible, they're going to go to Iran because they've seen it in mainstream media repeated day, you know, over a course of years, ramping up right before the event, right? And, you know, it just makes it easier for them to sell the narrative they want to sell, right?
So wait, yeah, sorry.
All right. So something else that's interesting that's going on right now is I think the same day that the TLAB channel was taken down, it happened to be the Trump administration's brand new conference on combating online anti-Semitism, hosted by our favorite guy, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The conference is titled Ancient Hatred, Modern Medium. Oh my God. This is
where
so
was this held?
I think it was broadcast online, but I didn't watch it, but it was on the, it was yesterday and today.
I just find it incredible how often Mike Pompeo's everything seems to be centered around Israeli agendas and Israeli benefits and what's good for, you know, it's in, this is he not an, a U.S. official, right? He gives his speech during the
Christian Zionist that's right. obsessed with the fulfillment of prophecies related to Israel. He and Mike Pence are both in that same extremist Christian Zionist camp that you see most embodied in groups like Kufi, led by John Hagee, who is actually a deeply anti-Semitic individual, if you actually read what he says about Jews, but he holds up Israel because he thinks the Jews need to all be in Israel and then all basically murdered for Jesus to come back. That's what Hagee thinks. So, you know, these people are nuts, but, you know, they're convenient for the political agendas of, you know, Israel's current government, so they work together despite the fact that a lot of that Christian Zionist ideology is actually itself based in anti-Semitism. But none of that you will be hearing at their conference on combating online anti-Semitism, you know, for another day. But it's important to point out who this conference brings together. Senior U.S. and foreign government leaders, like leaders from Israel's government, okay, and then representatives of social media platforms, okay, so they're bringing them together to talk about how we need to deplatform people. We'll see that in a second. So they're talking about far right and far left are both anti-Semitic and, let's see, talking about YouTube specifically, too many quote-unquote anti-Semitic posts on Twitter and YouTube, and how there needs to be mass deplatforming. This is being led by the Trump administration. This is a Trump administration conference that's bringing together government officials and social media representatives about how to police online speech of what they say is anti-Semitic. One of the participants in this conference is the Anti-Defamation League, okay? So what has the ADL been saying about anti-Semitism? Well, as you can see here, the executive director of the Jewish Democratic Council of America and former national security advisor for Kamala Harris is saying, Trump called Joe Biden, quote, a servant of the globalists. According to the ADL, globalists is a code word used by anti-Semites to describe Jews. Trump is a growing threat to our security, who continues to use hatred to further his political agenda. Okay, so what does the ADL actually say in here? Yes, they do say that globalist is a code word for Jew, even though they admit down here, although the term globalist is not inherently anti-Semitic, globalist is often used as a pejorative term for people whose interests in international commerce or finance ostensibly make them disloyal to the country in which they live and who are willing to undermine the financial security of their neighbors in order to benefit transnational interests. Okay, so I guess David Rockefeller, who admitted in his own autobiography that his family has been working against the interests of the United States to create a global government, now you can't say anything bad about him because you're actually saying it about, this is obviously, if you read what the ADL is saying here, this is a far reach. And what they're trying to do is basically just, you know, use this as a way to wrap everything that they're, you know, certain narratives they're not liking. They're trying to group it all together, just like they're trying to group all the bad guys they don't like into one big mass network. They're trying to say all the speech they're not liking now, you have to, you know, group together and it's anti-Semitic and now you're going to deplatform it. Okay.
Despite the obvious legitimacy of the real discussion of a dual loyalty thing, regardless of what country we're talking about, right? That's an obvious discussion, but the point that we're talking about globalist as let me make this clear. The reason that they are making this code word, but not necessarily an inherent anti-Semitic thing, is because that means they can use it if and when they want to. It's another tool in the belt to be like, oh, well, he's allowed to say globalist because we're okay with him. But when he says globalist, that becomes a bad thing. You see, and that's wildly subjective, but that's what all of this is. The fact that we can actually be talking about a genuine globalist thing and they can make it about something they want it to be about and they can censor you for it, right?
Well, here's the thing. Trump is so pro-Zionist and so pro-Israel.
Openly.
You know, and he's his administration, his Secretary of State is hosting this let's deplatform people for online anti-Semitism. And then this lady is saying, calling Joe Biden a servant of the globalists, is calling Joe Biden a servant of the No, that's not what's going on here. Okay, so basically they're just trying to like set up, a narrative to where people that are criticizing, a push for global government can now be deplatformed in the same way that people were being deplatformed for quote unquote anti-Semitism last year. And it's worth pointing out that the person who funds, who actually paid the seed money for the ADL to set up their hate lab in Silicon Valley was Pierre Omidyar, who owns PayPal and who also, backs The Intercept, among other things, right, but is also one of the main funders of these fake news watchdogs that has been trying to deplatform independent media this whole time. Okay. So,
Sorry, I thought you were done. I was just going to say one thing I think that stands out here is that this is like a supranational agenda. And that's what this makes it so clear is that they want this to be applicable at any point to anybody, including Trump, including Biden, including all these people. So when they use that to make it seem like what Trump says is also that problem, but then we have Trump's administration leading the conference on that problem, it just shows you that the entity that's driving all of the people in every aspect to point at that problem don't care who is ultimately that, you see what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter ultimately. It's as long as everybody is towing the line, then their agenda is going forward. And I'm talking about the Israeli government and the Zionists, in my opinion. And I think that's so apparent with that weird contradictory aspect of Trump versus, it's incredible how people can't see that. They don't have your interest in heart is the moral of that story.
Right. And it's worth pointing out the Anti-Defamation League is born out of an organization called B'nai B'rith. And a lot of the people that have funded the ADL historically also have ties to B'nai B'rith and are, part of this. What I talked about in my Epstein series, the mega group, these ties to the Meir Lansky Jewish American mob that has historical ties dating back to World War II with the CIA and also Israeli intelligence. That is essentially who runs the ADL, right? Their biggest funders have been these mega group billionaires like the Bronfmans, like Ronald Lauder, all of that stuff, who both have very close and deep ties to the US government and Israeli government. So if there's a particular narrative the ADL doesn't like, what we often see is that they attempt to lump real examples of anti-Semitism with legitimate criticisms of either the U.S. government and Israeli government, specifically in terms of the U.S. government, U.S. government foreign policy in the Middle East. They like to paint it all with the same brush. And so we're seeing them do that same tactic they've been doing for years now. But it's such a clear reach the way they're doing it now. Right. Oh. You have organizations that would normally be termed globalists that aren't Jewish at all, like the World Economic Forum. But you do have some prominent Zionists there, like Paul Singer, for example, of Elliott Capital Management. Who is also backed Trump at one point and is a major political donor and donates, alongside Sheldon Adelson with a lot of things. He's a big part of the World Economic Forum. Isabel Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's sister, also a technology pioneer for the World Economic Forum. You definitely have that particular faction, that's the power structure in Israel, being involved in those types of organizations. But now, if you want to criticize someone like Klaus Schwab, who's German, right, and not Jewish, you're going to go criticize the World Economic Forum. Well, that's for being globalist. Well, that's a code word for this. And now we're going to deplatform you, right? So, this is all in pursuance of a particular agenda, and it has nothing to do with actually stomping out real anti-Semitism. It's about weaponizing Jewish identity for, the interests of this particular political faction.
Right. Right. And to the point we made earlier, just to end this point, is that there's a lot, a completely suppressed and not acknowledged large group of people in Israel that are openly protesting against this exact idea the idea of Judaism is being hijacked by Zionism is the point. And there's open Jewish groups that are making that claim. So the idea that that can be anti-Semitic is just dumb, right? But that's the point of all of this, is they apply that to things that they want to keep quiet that are ultimately genuine discussions.
Right. So moving on then. So something interesting happened this year. And the CIA for the past several years has issued something every year that they called the Worldwide Threat Assessment. And 2020 is the first year in many years that the CIA chose not to issue one. But DHS, created in 2003, has never issued a Homeland Threat Assessment before. But this is the year that they just chose to make one, the same year the CIA chooses not to make their threat assessment. It's a little weird. Anyway, Why did DHS feel like waiting almost 20 years to issue their first threat assessment? I would argue it's because we are about to see a pivot from the war on foreign terror to the war on domestic terror. And that should be pretty obvious to most people that watch TLAF pretty regularly. But I'm not going to go through this whole document. But I recommend looking at it yourself, because they're basically, you know, telling you, you know, the problems that the U.S. government are going to create and then blame on other people they don't like, because that's essentially how, you know, the national security state operates. Mm. but, you know, so here they're giving an overview of some of the things in the conclusion, talking about the structure. I couldn't highlight this document because it's a PDF, yeah. Unfortunately. But here they are talking about cyber threats to the homeland, okay? So there's a lot about the election stuff in here that they say was going to happen, and a lot of it is exactly like the simulations that Cyber Reason did just together with DHS, right? Because they participated in that, so they're repeating a lot of the same things. Saying that Russia's going to use cyber actors for social engineering and use zero-day attacks, go after vulnerable software. China is going to do the same thing. They're going to do corporate espionage, you know. Let's see. They also talk about North Korea and Iran in here. Iranian and North Korean cyber actors are a threat to the homeland. Cybercrime, but this is the main one about the election. They essentially say there is going to be some sort of effort to comprise or disrupt infrastructure around the 2020 presidential election.
It's worth noting that all the things they're listing out that they may be doing are things that the U.S. government has done.
Verify. Yes, exactly. And then foreign influence activity. This is the one, honestly, that I think is pretty crazy. And it sort of ties into what that lady in that tweet, the former national security advisor for Kamala Harris, was saying. I'm not seeing it now. That stinks. Basically, anyone who says that Joe Biden is not nice is a Russian bot. I'll have to search for
that's
it.
Easy. That's convenient.
Yes, isn't it? Oh, here it is. Russia uses divisive measures to disrupt the electoral process. This is talking about Russian election meddling in 2020, including denigrating former Vice President Biden and what it sees as an anti-Russian, quote unquote, establishment as part of a broader effort to divide and destabilize America. Okay, so DHS, Chad Wolf, a Trump appointee, Trump's DHS is openly saying it's Russian election disinformation to say anything bad about Joe Biden, Trump's opponent in the election.
So what do you read into that? I mean, so is this just meant to be a ploy, or do you think that, I mean, that's really convoluted?
Well, first of all, I think it's totally insane. Yeah. How did Trump supporting media not pick up on this and raise right. hell? Because
which is a huge red flag that this is yeah. part of some bigger ploy.
Oh, I agree. Because, I mean, DHS met with all these social media companies last year, last September, and said, you need to deplatform anyone ahead of the 2020 election that is, you know, a foreign interference operations. You had to deplatform them. And here DHS says at the beginning of this month, a month before the election, they say Russian disinformation is saying anything bad about Biden. Okay. Could DHS perhaps be blamed for some of the censorship of things like the Hunter Biden emails and all of this stuff too? Yeah, probably so. Good because point. They're essentially saying anything bad about Biden is Russian disinformation. And Chad Wolf signed off on this. So if you're a Trump supporter, why are you not like insanely mad at Chad Wolf right now? I mean, why are mainstream or not even mainstream alternative pro-Trump sites not, you know, raising, you know, red flags about this? Well, you know, the censorship justification by Twitter for these negative stories about Biden, you know, it was actually set up by DHS, who met with Twitter last September and said, take off Russian disinformation. And here they say saying anything bad about Biden or the establishment is Russian disinformation. That's half of the country easily being identified by DHS as Russian bots, essentially. I mean, that's insane. Or here they call them Russian online influence actors.
They don't want to use the buzzword anymore. You know, but that's the frustrating part about this is when, the people that don't want to see this will brush it off as enemies closer, a 4D chess move, a game, a troll on the Democrats, or something that just makes it well, we don't need to know why. It's because they're, you know, we just already trust this person. I mean, that's an obvious point in a long list of points, even today, that we've made a questionable things that should be called out about Trump's involvement in all this that just don't get discussed, even by the mainstream media, like you're pointing out. This is obviously some coordinated thing. That's my opinion, but I think that's very clear.
Right. I mean, I tend to agree with you. what's interesting here, too, is that they're talking about, okay, so Russian influence, these Russian disinformation, foreign interferers, they're, this is how their, you know, trade craft is evolving. And one of the things they're citing here, VPNs, virtual private networks, which a lot of people are using to get around censorship from the U.S. government. Okay, so they're starting to flag these things as being used by these nasty foreign interferers. Right? So encrypted communications, VPNs, all this stuff, they're starting to identify this and tie it to a state actor. This is this is definitely something to pay attention to. And this whole document.
Real quick, that's the modern version of, if you haven't done anything wrong, you've got nothing to hide, right? That's the internet version of that, essentially. Like, because VPNs are for people that want privacy. That's what they are. So if you have that, well, you're hiding something. This is inherent. It's in all of their conversations. Sorry, I just want to point that out. Keep going.
No, it's fine. So really quick, they're talking in here also about some of the stuff that we've been talking about today, the white supremacist working with ISIS and Al-Qaeda is in here too. And then talking about Iran, right? And then right there, it's biological weapons threats, you know, the coming bioterror events, they say. Because the same narrative as we were pointing out on that show where we went into this in depth, you know, rapid advances in biotechnology and genomics, which are all controlled by, you know, people like Bill Gates and all the organizations they fund and all this stuff, not, you know, Al-Qaeda, right?
But right.
anyway, they're saying, you know, all the things that those entities, including the U.S. government, are funding are going to create a bioterror nightmare of some sort. So it's very interesting, this entire document. It has a lot of the different narratives that we've been talking about and warning about in here. So I encourage people to read it. In the interest of time, though, I wanted to just go through the last part of this pretty quickly, but it's really, this is a really crucial story that did not get a lot of coverage. And I would argue that the reason it didn't get a lot of coverage is because it shows that the very networks that the US government is now saying are going to be hacked by Iran, Russia, and China. Earlier this month, the same day this Homeland Threat Assessment came out, the US government supported a ruling, the FCC really, that made those exact infrastructure, parts of the infrastructure, more vulnerable to hacks or other problems. So they're the U.S. government here essentially weakened the very systems they say are going to be attacked and vulnerable to foreign hackers right before the election. Why would they do that if they're warning they're about to be attacked? Why would they make them more vulnerable? All right, so let's get into this really quick. Last week, this was published on October 7th, okay, so in early October, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled that the FCC doesn't have to delay opening up the 6 gigahertz spectrum band for unlicensed Wi-Fi. This is for Wi-Fi 6, which is, you know, 5G is the cellular network. Wi-Fi 6 is the Wi-Fi equivalent to 5G, okay? So what they're saying here, extending Wi-Fi into the 6 gigahertz spectrum can provide more Wi-Fi capacity than all the other bands put together. That's what the telecom companies, their lobby group, the Wireless Broadband Alliance, was saying. And this, of course, was supported by FCC, which is headed by a Trump appointee. I think his name is Ajit Pai or something like that, if I remember correctly. So anyway, as it points out down here, even though it's going to make your Wi-Fi faster and rewrite the rules of what is possible, down here it says the promise of 6 gigahertz Wi-Fi is counterbalanced by an increased risk of interference to utility and public safety activities. It turns out the reason the FCC ruling happened is because actually utility companies and public safety organizations sued the government saying this would upend their mission critical communications and make them more vulnerable to having their communications, their mission critical communications knocked out. The very stuff the U.S. government is saying is going to be hacked on election day by Iran. Okay. So, you know, just got to make it easy for them, I guess. You know, those unsophisticated Iranian hackers need a little help from the FCC, I guess. This is so clownish. Anyway, what it says in here, utilities use the 6 gigahertz band for mission critical communications. Interference could negatively impact the monitoring and repair of power lines, for example. Seen all those reports recently about how Iran and China are going to go for the power grid in the U.S. and take it down? Uh-oh. Well, it looks like they're saying that will happen because of this new FCC ruling that the U.S. government is fervently supporting. Weird. So why hasn't CISA or DHS said anything about this ruling? Don't you think they'd be like,
How do they justify it? What are they saying? If the entity spoke up and said, no, this will make it more vulnerable. Yeah, why do they say, no, we'll do it anyway? Does it get to that?
Yeah, I'll show you the quote at the end. Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, it doesn't explain anything, but I mean,
that's what I was expecting.
Okay. Yeah. It just shows you how transparent this is, right? So as such, stakeholders in the utilities industry are experiencing a great deal of anxiety about the FCC's decision. So the utility industry isn't experiencing a great deal of anxiety about Iranian hackers. It's about the FCC's decision. Right. Okay. Why don't you listen to what the utilities and public safety organizations are saying themselves, what they're worried about? Oh, they're mad at the U.S. government for screwing everything up for them. Anyway, Thornmeyer, who's part of this utilities organization, he pointed out that many utility companies are already looking at reengineering their entire communication system, which can take 5 to 10 years because of this potential threat by the FCC ruling. Okay. Wow. So the FCC ruling presents such a grave threat to utility companies that they are already going to retool their entire communication system. This is obviously a huge undertaking for them because of how unfortunate this is for them. Okay, and so it's not just utility companies. The Association of Public Safety Communications Officials is also against the idea of opening up the 6 gigahertz band for unlicensed Wi-Fi. Here's the quote. From their filing in August. Public safety agencies use the 6 gigahertz band for mission critical systems that support operational needs, such as dispatching first responders and maintaining voice communications during incidents. So this is the 911 call center, okay? These are the 911 people saying that this ruling opens them up to, you know, major potential issues. Okay, so remember a couple weeks ago we talked about the 911 call centers all mysteriously going down at the same time. We'll get into that a little more in a second. Anyway, this filing continues. Disruption to these systems could have dire consequences. Assistance to the public could be delayed. Law enforcement officers, emergency medical technicians, and firefighters might lack the ability to transmit emergency calls for assistance and other information essential for protecting life and property. Isn't it weird that Cyber Reason predicted that 911 call centers would be hacked on election day and that no one would be able to respond to the chaos created by cyber attacks and that people would die? And I mean,
and that's being caused by the FCC ruling. Yeah, that's incredibly alarming.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, the official statement that how they explain this, Ajit Pai of the FCC, who supports this ruling, said appropriate steps are going to be taken to prevent interference on the 6 gigahertz band. Yeah. Okay. So just trust us. We're taking care of it is essentially right. What the FCC is saying.
Remember, Ajit Pai, I believe, is the name you'll remember from the discussions of I'm forgetting the name of it, but in regard to the internet and how the big shift they made in regard to the internet and I'm blanking completely on the name of the legislation, but it was about the internet being more free and open versus controlled. And it was ultimately, that was a big issue that I'm gonna have to follow up on that because that seems relevant to this discussion, but I can't seem to pull it out of my head. So keep going.
No worries. But you know, this is really crazy. So to sum up, I mean, I already summed it up, I guess, but basically, I mean, this is just so transparent. Okay, the very systems, the organizations that represent the people at the very systems they say will be hacked on election day are complaining and experiencing a great deal of anxiety after a policy the U.S. government wanted to implement and is supporting, not Iranian hackers and Chinese hackers. Okay.
Right. It was net neutrality, by the way. I just looked it up real quick. Remember the discussion about all that? That was the name that you might remember from. Mm-hmm. It seems relevant to where we are right now.
So interesting that in addition to cyber reason, saying 911 call centers would go down on election day and things like that. Hackers, you know, all this worry about hackers taking down dozens of 9/11 centers. This has been seeded in mainstream media, just like alongside the attacks on election and the power grid and all of this stuff. You know, they've been doing this for years too. Here's one from last month. That was when it happened. 911 systems are down, widespread outage happens. It was also the hospitals were hacked at the same day. Mm-hmm. This is from last year. New Orleans government hit with cyber attack, but their 911, their 911 system was unaffected. Interesting. Okay, so let's see. They were hit with a big cyber attack that took down everything, but the one thing it didn't take down was their 911 emergency system. What's interesting about this? Well, it turns out New Orleans was if not the first, one of the earliest cities to adopt a new 911 call center system called Carbine 911, which it did so prior to this cyber attack taking everything down, but Carbine 911. All right, so then a couple months later, March 17th, 2020, to fight coronavirus, this city is asking 911 callers to agree to self-surveillance.
And Kate, I want to make sure too that if you're planning on it, I'll discuss Carbine so people again know what that
absolutely.
Is. Same like cyber reason. It's important.
There's a summary in here. But anyway, starting on March 16th, 2020, emergency responders in the city of New Orleans are adapting to the new normal amidst the coronavirus pandemic by testing out Carbine, an Israeli startup providing next generation 911 tech founded by 35-year-old entrepreneur Amar Elchai, or Elichai. Okay, so as I just pointed out a second ago, New Orleans adopted Carbine 911, I think before the Epstein scandal even broke, around the same time. I think it was in July of last year. So it's not new with March, but they just advanced it, how the extent to which it's implemented more in March of this year. Anyway, these responders are now using a tool built in part by former members of Israel's military intelligence. Amar Elichai is actually just one of the founders of Carbine 911. They didn't include that here, but they're Unit 8200. And the other co-founder that has since left the company, she used to work for Black Cube, and now she works for Eric Prince of Blackwater, who's also tied up with the Trump administration. Anyway, so who backs Carbine 911? Well, it's Peter Thiel of Palantir and his founders fund. It's Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak and Jeffrey Epstein. That might be where you've heard Carbine before with the Epstein scandal.
All right. Well, and note the tie-in with Palantir and Operation Warp Speed and all this different, you know, all of these things may seem separate when you're not looking at them together, but there's clearly tie-ins here. Mm-hmm. I think it's alarming that any foreign entity would be in control of 911 call centers. I don't know why that's not something we can discuss, you know?
Yeah, or an intelligence-linked pedophile or the former Prime Minister of Israel, Ehud Barak, who screamed at Bill Clinton as sitting president in a room demanding that he pardon Mark Rich, which Bill Clinton then did. You know, this is so normal, guys.
Yeah.
Embrace the new normal. No, I'm kidding. It's just so insane, you know. Anyway, here it says, Carbine relies on callers submitting themselves to self-surveillance via their own mobile phone. What this means is that you allow Carbine 911, you voluntarily agree to be surveilled by Carbine 911 to use the Carbine 911 call system. So if you want to call any, I encourage people to go and read my really deep dive on Carbine 911 that I did last year, about a year ago, October of last year. I think I published it, maybe September. That goes into this in detail. Essentially what Carbine 911 does is that when you call any 911 call center connected to the Carbine network, it takes everything off of your phone and it stores it. It gains access that you cannot turn off to your camera or your microphone. And then it takes all of that data and uses it not just to analyze the past and the present, but to predict the future. If you will be the a likely future victim, future perpetrator of a crime, or if you will in the future be in the vicinity of a future crime.
And
going
this
back
is,
to New Orleans. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
This is not for COVID-19, right? This is not for, like, realize the interesting tie-in that it's the same objective from a different angle, but it's happening simultaneously, but this is not even remotely connected to COVID-19. Just notice that these are all the same things. And I know I make that point a lot, but I always want to draw people's minds back to the fact that this is about something else. And it's just a narrative on top of it. Your work has made that incredibly clear.
Right. Well, Carbine 911 was trying to sell the adoption of their system last year, saying it would prevent mass shootings or mitigate the bloodshed from mass shootings, particularly in schools in the U.S., right? And now it's all about COVID-19, how convenient. But what's interesting about New Orleans being the city that is piloting this Carbine 911 to an extreme degree is because Peter Thiel's Palantir is also involved in predictive policing, and Palantir piloted their predictive policing program in New Orleans, and then that ends because of public outrage. And who comes in? Carbine 911, also funded by Peter Thiel, to do the same thing, but even go even farther than Palantir was going. Okay, so, you know, this is really, really disturbing. And so it's interesting that the cyber attack didn't take down Carbine 911, right? But okay, so who's on Carbine 911's advisory board now? Well, it's interesting because Carbine 911, after the Epstein scandal, they removed Nicole Yunkerman, who's an Epstein affiliate, who was part of Carbine 911. They removed Ehud Barak from their board of directors. He used to be chairman of the board. Now he's nowhere, right? They try to do damage control. You can totally tell. But here's their new advisory board, which has been updated recently. You have Christian Nielsen, the former head of DHS, who Chad Wolf replaced. Remember, Chad Wolf is acting secretary of DHS. This is Trump's DHS head. Right there with Michael Chertoff, whose mom was in Mossad. Don't forget that. And he's former head of DHS under George W. Bush and also part of the Transition Integrity Project, which is simulating complete chaos on the day of the election until Inauguration Day. That's Chertoff, too. Right. But not only them, you have former assistant director for intelligence at the FBI, former director of FEMA, the director of FEMA while Chertoff was head of DHS, I might add, former police commissioner of the Boston Police at the time the Boston Marathon bombings took place.
It's just ridiculous.
Former sheriff for LAPD. And then this guy, Trey Stevens, partner at Founders Fund, which is the Peter Thiel venture capital firm that funded Carbine 911. And he's worked with Palantir. He used to be at Palantir. So, you know, okay, so pretty interesting that we're seeing, by the way, Carbine 911 partnered with Google and Microsoft and Amazon. Okay. Mark 43, which is the Jeff Bezos-backed law enforcement company, also tied up with former CIA director David Petraeus and Ashton Kutcher, who we talked about before, right? So very interesting to see Carbine 911 partnered with all of these guys who are simulating this chaos, right? Or talking about, you know, Iranian hackers, the 911 call center is going to be hacked. Here's Carbine 911 ready to come to the rescue. Just so crazy. The perfect storm there. They're arming and then they're claiming, you know, at the same time that they know all these things are coming together, which, you know, if you look at an example like this, it's pretty clear who's orchestrating what, right?
They're building it.
Right. And they're telling you all this stuff is going to converge, and they're telling you they're going to blame the exact people they want you to go to war with right now. You know, it couldn't be more transparent. You know, it's just, it's outrageous. So I only have one little story to conclude at the end. Is there anything else you want to
tack on? Please go ahead.
All right. So just to wrap up here, I wanted to, All right, there we go. I just wanted to bring up this story. AOC plays Among Us, the video game on Twitch, sparking one of the most watched streams ever. And then you have Mother Jones saying AOC and Ilhan Omar playing video games on Twitch is the future of left politics. Okay. I just want to, you know, I've been a longtime critic of AOC. I wrote a piece, a very negative piece about her a while ago, back when I worked at Mint Press News, and I still maintain those same views. But I would like to point out, as we've talked about on the show, there is so much other stuff going on in this country right now. Basically, AOC and Ilhan Omar are being like, you know, court jesters, clowns, right, for people on the left and progressives to look at, They're playing video games. They're not doing anything important. I mean, look at what the situation that's being set up, that they're going to spring on the American public here in just a couple weeks' time. And the biggest political story that most left-wing alternative media, independent media, like pundits and like news outlets are talking about right now is AOC playing video games about like zombies or whatever on Twitch. That's the big story. I mean, do you not see how this is just a shell. This is just political theater in a huge way. And I just, you know, if you are one of the people in independent media that has a following and this is where you're focusing your attention, shame on you. Agreed. Shame on you.
It's 100%. It's obviously distraction in at the surface level. This is clearly meant to just take attention away from easily one of the most important thing that's ever happened in this country, right? And also on top of it, the argument that this is the future of politics suggests clearly that politics in their mind has nothing to do with truth or change or anything other than just making sure people are consumed with what they want you to be looking at. Right? I mean, that's what they're telling you right there. That's the future. So we're going to use this gaming culture to manipulate you into thinking what we want you to talk about. That's how I perceive it anyway, because there's no dialogue happening. There's no actual discussion of topics. It's just distraction.
If they're telling you the future of left politics is watching the squad play video games on a live stream, they're telling you the future of left politics is has gone down the drain, essentially. Yeah. Right. There's nothing about politics there, watching AOC and Ilhan Omar giggle as they play a video game and you watching them. Right. Okay, so like 500,000 Americans tuned in to watch this big distraction. You know, great job on your PSYOP is really all I can say there.
It just
shows
nothing of
substance comes from that.
Yeah, they're just the new, they're transitioning politicians into like the new reality TV stars, right? I mean, they're just public faces now. And that's what
started with Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, these are just puppets. These are people that they parade out in front, and they're making, you know, it's like a fusion of celebrity culture in the US we're seeing now. Yeah. You know, AOC and Ilhan Omar and that whole squad have been held up in this way where they've like, you know, been made into celebrities, and now you're gonna watch them play video games while the country around you burns and goes down the freaking drain. We're supposed to be like, this is the future of politics. I mean, resist this, people. And honestly, I'm at the point where I have so little patience because of what we're seeing coming together, you know, in this election that is like not very far away at all. And then we have people who have big platforms who claim to be speaking truth to power and fighting the establishment. And they claim to be anti-imperialist. And they're talking about AOC and Ilhan Omar playing video games. Like, you know, you guys are frauds. If you, you know, I'm just mad.
No, I agree. I mean, the reality is that anybody that is, I mean, on its face, you can feel that this is not relevant to the real discussion. So anybody that is using that is either trying to gain more followers to use it to progress their own thing or just to distract you. I mean, you can choose your pick, but at the end of the day, they're not talking about what needs to be discussed. And I don't even mean my opinion of it. There's any number of things that I think we can all agree need to be discussed, and those aren't what are being addressed. And I think that the hijacking of the independent media or media in general has been an ongoing thing, and we always need to consider that, right? Just question everything, including us, right? That's always how that should be.
Right, absolutely. So I just wanted to end on that note because honestly, we are at a point where independent media cannot afford to be caught up in this sham election, this political theater that's going on right now. There are clearly other things going on behind the scenes that are going to affect everyone in the country, regardless of what the outcome of the election is. Team red, team blue, it doesn't matter. There is clearly huge consequential things that are going to happen that we can see coming. And so if you are capable of seeing that coming and you're choosing to discuss AOC's Twitch stream, you know, delete your account and find a new career, you know, in mainstream media or something not related media, or stop claiming to be adversarial and speaking truth to power if you're going to cover, you know, clown world political theater.
Yeah. I mean, I would make this just elaborate to extrapolate at the point. I would argue that it's the same in a lot of other topics, not just this AOC thing, but
right. Well, sure.
And I know that's what you meant. That was just the point you're making with that one topic. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of these things out there that people are covering that are continuing to, you know, kind of circle back to, that may even be important to a lot of degree, but are clearly not what we should be focusing on while people are literally being arrested for speaking their mind in the United States. Like, that's even something that's very new. But that people in this country are being attacked and arrested for things that are wildly unconstitutional. Or even the fact that our country and our government has continued to wage wildly illegal wars for pretty much as long as I can remember. And that's including Donald Trump. But sure, let's talk about these new little, left-right paradigm evolutionary thing. It's frustrating. I'm in the same boat. And it's like we were watching things burn down around us. And this is what people are focusing on. And that should bother us. That should bother everyone.
Well, like, progressives that are claiming to, like, speak for the working class, and, like, there's this wave of evictions coming. Wall Street has, like, pillaged the U.S. economy, and the Fed, to a huge degree under the guise of COVID-19 relief. And you want to talk about video game Twitch streams and act like AOC is actually doing something because she's spending her time playing a video game and a bunch of people are watching it? I mean, are you kidding me? You're not progressive. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just, there is no, like, substantive political thought there. You know, it's just clearly, it's celebrity culture masquerading as politics. And so, you know, if you're one of the people promoting this, you didn't, need to change what you're doing or get out of the game.
That's an excellent point you made there, because you tied in the thing we made in regard to government, but it's the same idea in media, right? It's the same thing. And even in independent media, you see, and to wrap it up here, I think the point is that you will see a lot of people out there that make themselves the story. Almost, right. Half the time at least. And that shows you something, right? But at the end of the day, the point shouldn't be that we need to seek out and find the ones that we shouldn't. We need to be questioning all of it. You need to be asking questions and thinking for yourself, not choosing one outlet that just guides you down this path. You need to guide yourself down this path. And that's what we need to get back to. That's what they've stolen from you. And I think those outlets you're talking about, they're part of that problem. Whether they were told to be or they just don't care, that's where we are now. So it's investigative stuff like this, stuff that hacks at the root of the two-party paradigm, that is exactly why we're not allowed on these platforms, because this is the real discussion that needs to be had. Now, thank you for being here today and laying this out for us, because this is very important. Anything else you want to leave before we end the show today?
All I really want to say is, obviously what YouTube and Google were seeking to do with deplatforming TLAB is what they do when they try and deplatform everyone. They want to demoralize us. They want us to, feel discouraged from continuing to do what we're going to do. But this has actually had the complete opposite effect. And I think a lot of people, longtime viewers and new viewers, will be seeing that very shortly. And I'll just leave it there.
I couldn't agree more. I think that this is the straw that broke the camel's back to a degree, and people are beginning to see the new beginning that this really should be. So thank you for being here today. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.